Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod podcast with Statsman and AJ, brought to you with support from our pals at Owner's Box with their new way to enjoy fantasy sports. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host is AJ Scholes, who's a great follow at AJScholes24, who's based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, right near our RotoWire headquarters over there in Madison. AJ, the Vancouver Canucks may have the longest list of COVID protocol that we've seen so far this year, with about 17 or 18 people on that list, and the club won't play any games this week. They already missed a couple. On the heels of this news, there are whispers of a return to all the teams that qualify for the postseason, reconvening in two bubbles just as they did last year for the upcoming playoffs. Don't really know. No decision has been finalized there. But we, on the flip side, we saw a full stadium of fans in yesterday's baseball game in Texas, and that's the other end of the spectrum in terms of the impact of COVID that we're seeing in North America. I applaud teams that are still staying healthy in these most challenging times, but I'm not sure what to make of the remaining NHL schedule. What are your expectations going forward?
Well, I think the priority here for Vancouver is, you know, prioritizing the games that are remaining. You know, they've got all their games played against Montreal, who's one spot ahead of them in the standings. So we don't have to worry about that. I think really you have to determine, is Vancouver and potentially Calgary, are they playoff teams? So for my money, I think they rejigger the entire North schedule here around this. You get Vancouver playing Calgary in their couple remaining games, including a few that had to be rescheduled. You move the Vancouver games against Ottawa to the end of the season and just basically say, like, if we need these games, if Vancouver is in a playoff spot and we need these games, then we play them. If not, then, you know, maybe they play them anyway just for the sake of playing games. But I just don't see them really needing to get all of these games in necessarily, especially when you consider Vancouver and Ottawa have four games remaining. I think that's got to be the least priority. Get the games against Calgary. Honestly, push the Toronto games to just before they play Ottawa, because Toronto's kind of wrapped up. Not to jinx it here, Paul, but Toronto seems to have wrapped up first place in the division. So, I think you got to prioritize the middle set there, figure out what you have in terms of playoff teams or not, and then decide if you need those Ottawa games.
Well, that seems to be the best solution that I've heard, and I urge our listeners to start a petition in support of AJ for commissioner of the NHL. Clearly a man of action who can think on the fly and comes up with a very reasonable solution that makes sense to me at first blush. So good on you for coming up with that one, AJ. I think it's the most sensible thing. Get rid of the games.
that don't have an impact, like you said, throw them at the end of the schedule and try and get the key ones in as quickly as possible so that they do have some vision of how things are going to shake out in this playoff race in the North Division. AJ, we are ready to do our weekly roundup, taking a look at the moves that the 31 teams are making and roster shuffling that's happening in each locale. But before we do, as every week, we turn to you and want to listen to what you have to say about Owner's Box.
Hey, NHL fans. Owner's Box is here to reinvent the way you play fantasy sports this season. Owner's Box is not DFS. They are the first ever weekly fantasy sports platform that combines the best elements of the industry into one product. Owner's Box is a head-to-head elimination-style format that keeps players engaged through live snake drafts, social interaction, and a new layer of strategy that allows you to become the ultimate fantasy GM. The best part about weekly fantasy sports is there's no long-term commitment. Users are able to draft a new team every single day and participate in different types of contests to keep the fantasy experience fresh and fun so you're never out of the game. Compete with your opponent over 7 days of fierce competition and get paid out weekly. No more falling subject to unfair payouts, as up to 50% of users win money. Owner's Box also allows users to brand themselves and engage socially across the platform in multiple different ways. Add friends, create custom leagues, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. Think you've got what it takes to be a weekly fantasy guru? Head over to ownersbox.com and start making a name for yourself today. In honor of the NHL season, if you sign up free now, Owner's Box will match your first deposit up to $500. What are you waiting for? Head over to ownersbox.com/rotowire to claim your bonus and join the new wave of fantasy sports.
Okay, partner, this week I go first as we go back and forth with the 31 teams, and you catch a break because you don't have to say much about what Vancouver is going to be up to because they're not playing. So I got a little extra homework in preparation for today's pod than you, you lucky guy. In order, we begin with Anaheim, and this is a team that's now eighth in the Western Division, 0-2-1 last week, and I wonder if they finally considered dealing away their captain, Ryan Getzlaf, who, at age 35, who's in the final year of his contract with an $8.25 million cap hit. He actually missed his last game with an upper body injury, but should return later this week and be marketable if they so choose, or maybe if he allows for a trade to take place and take a final run at a championship after his long and storied career. Other injury news really dots the landscape here in Anaheim. John Gibson, back from his upper body injury, got into two starts last week, AJ, and allowed only 5 goals against, so good for him, looking good and ready to take hold of that top goalie role once again. But there are a whole host of other injury updates. The key one, Rickard Rakell, with an upper body injury, unknown duration, and that's a shame because he's maybe the most marketable guy at the trade deadline that I see here in the Anaheim landscape, and you'd like to get some assets for a guy who's ready to leave on an expiring contract, it seems. Troy Terry also listed as day-to-day with an upper body injury. Sam Steele, undisclosed injury and unknown return. Gee, thanks, Ducks, for all that injury information and the clarity that you provided us. I hope that the NHL really straightens this out, AJ. I can't stand this unknown and uncertain. They got to be more clear and fair. And let's face it, gambling has a lot to play in what I'm saying in terms of more access to better information regarding the status of some of their injured players.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the NFL and they've got, you know, weekly injury reports with specific injury locations, specific, status at practice limited that they share that information every single week. So I agree. I think as, you know, partnerships with gambling entities and that expand, the NHL is going to have to, you know, force teams to provide some more information in terms of timelines and whatnot. But I agree with you. I think injuries are the biggest concern for them now because it does impact their ability to make some moves here. For, you know, Rickard Rakell does have one more year, so he wouldn't be a pure rental, which obviously would be attractive to a couple of teams. Outside of him, I don't know that there's really anybody that's going to be that interested. I just don't see anybody willing to pay $4.1 million or have the space to take on $4.1 million in terms of cap to get Ryan Getzlaf in the fold here. I just don't see it in this season. So I would be shocked personally if he gets traded. In Arizona, they've been continuing to ride Aiden Hill, as they've been without Darcy Kemper or Antti Raanta for a while now. Hill, 3 games, 2 wins, 8 goals allowed, a decent 2-1 week for Arizona. They got production out of Nick Schmaltz, 1 goal, 3 assists, Jordan Gross with 3 helpers over that stretch. And they find themselves in fourth place. They're right in the mix. The concern for me is long-term, can Aiden Hill really carry this team? If you include last night's game, he's on a 3-game winning streak. He's won 3 or 6 of his last 7 games, so certainly he seems to be showing some success. If they think he's the real deal, then do they look at trading Darcy Kemper? Again, injuries hampering the possibilities here, because if Kemper's fully fit, then you probably don't even get a look at Hill. So do you want to trade him? But, is anybody going to take him on with that injury concern? It's just kind of really muddied the water, in my opinion, here.
Yeah, and the one guy that they would like to move on an expiring contract, $5 million cap hit, is Nick Hjalmarsson, but he isn't even traveling with the team at the beginning of a long 9-game road trip that they're on, and you wonder if he's going to be ready to play and help another team. But that would have been the most marketable piece that I see on this roster if they don't go ahead and make the postseason. They're in a battle, though, for a playoff spot, and he could even help them get in if he's healthy. So a key situation there with one of their better defensive defensemen. In Boston, the Bruins are sitting fourth in the East after a 2-1 week, and it was some secondary scoring types who finally rose to the front of the weekly scoring leaders that we talk about with each club. Craig Smith picking up 5 helpers. David Krejci back and healthy with a goal and 4 helpers. And Nick Ritchie with a goal and 2 assists. I want to talk about him a little bit more, AJ, because as left wing on the second line, he's finally kind of achieving a level that I thought that he could as a big physical guy with a scoring touch coming out of his draft a few years ago. This guy plays a typically Bruin game with a lot of physicality in it, but he's shown an offensive touch now. He has 5 points in his last 5 games played, pushing past Jake DeBrusk and pushing him down on the depth chart and really firmly into Bruce Cassidy's doghouse, it seems, with his down season overall. I've heard his name mentioned in trade talks, but you want to see something out of him before you jump and acquire a guy like that. But could be a case of selling low on a guy who was central to some of the recent playoff successes in Boston. Tuukka Rask is still out of the lineup here, which means Daniel Vladar has had to hold the fort because Jaro Halak has just entered COVID protocol, and young Jeremy Swayman is up for a first look at around the league here as a backup goalie. So they have games the first 2 days of this week. Last night they got one in, and tonight you wonder if Jeremy Swayman gets his first career start in the second of back-to-backs. However, Tuukka Rask is along for the ride on their current road trip, so it could be back in the lineup next weekend, and it gives me a chance to remind our listeners that AJ and friends at the head office, they do a great job in updating the lineups on a daily basis, and the Bruin goaltending situation is a key one to understand as you're setting your daily fantasy lineups, and so look there, look no further than the RotoWire daily lineups and depth charts to get your best picks in there. A similar timetable for Rask is in store for Kevin Miller, a defenseman who's a key to the depth here, and they need him to bolster that depth, which has never looked weaker, in my opinion, but somehow or other they continue to play that tight defensive game, and one of the better teams at keeping shots away from the net.
Well, I mean, generally I agree with you with that, but you look at their most recent game against the Penguins, it was anything but a defensive game,
right,
from either side. A 7-5 a clash between those two clubs, and that speaks to the concerns there with the goaltending situation. Are you going to give Daniel Vladar 2 games in a row, anticipating that he won't have to play the next game because you'll get Tuukka Rask back? That's certainly, if they really think Rask is available after today, then maybe you go that route. Or do you go with Jeremy Swayman, who's never played in an NHL game? These are big questions. Look, the other thing that's weird to me is after a game like they had, that they've got Marchand, Bergeron on a different line from David Pastrnak. I get you're trying to spread things out, but you just can't break this line up. It just makes no sense to me to separate those guys with how good they have been and continue to be. In Buffalo, it was a good week for Sabres fans. They went 2-0-2, no regulation losses. That's a big week for the Buffalo Sabres. A lot of that thanks to the return of Linus Olmark, 2 wins in 3 games, 7 goals allowed. Brandon Montour picked up 3 goals. Casey Mittelstadt with 2 goals and 1 assist. Look, Mittelstadt's the guy I most want to talk about here. This is a player who at one point they had sent down to the minors because he just was not fitting in terms of their depth. I think when he was originally drafted, you slated him potentially as third-line center who could challenge for more. But they're putting him in a first-line role right now because they don't have Jack Eichel. They don't have Dylan Cousins. Curtis Lazar is hurt as well. And he seems to be, you know, taking it in stride. So maybe that time in the minors has really benefited him. One kind of, you know, concerning thing that they are going to have to monitor, Kyle Okposo hasn't been skating at practice but playing in games. He's got 4 assists in the last couple of contests here. And so I think that's one to monitor. But really, ultimately, I think the biggest thing around the league in terms of the Sabres is who is going to finish the season with that team. There's a number of guys whose names have been bandied about here. Of course, Taylor Hall being the biggest one. Paul, what do you think? Who's the trade chip for Buffalo now that they've already sent off Eric Staal?
Well, you know what? Teams are looking for goaltending help. And I mean, Buffalo could make a bold move and try and...
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Put Linus Ullmark on the trade block. This guy, all he's done is had a post a 244 goals against average and a 92% save percentage, a winning record, AJ, in 16 starts. I can't believe Buffalo would offer this guy around the league because that's one guy who's done his part to mitigate the disastrous circumstances. He hasn't had much help, and yet these numbers are nothing short of heroic. And yet I'm still hearing his name in trade rumors. None of that makes sense. If I'm a rival GM and they're serious about moving this guy, I'm on the phone to Buffalo about their goaltender there. I can't believe that, but the whispers are out, and I'm quite surprised by all of it. The Carolina Hurricanes, they're third in a very competitive Central Division. Warren Fogle leading the offense with 2 goals, but Brett Pesce, with 3 helpers, has continued a fine run on the blue line over there and developed into a more prolific offensive piece from the back end that I didn't expect. But he's been a steady defensive defenseman, so quite the package there. Best news of all in Carolina, though, Peter Mrazek returned to game action after a one-month absence, and all he did was immediately restake his claim to the top goaltending role with a 28-save shutout. That should make James Reimer expendable at the trade deadline with his expiring contract a factor as well. And they have Alex Nedeljkovic in tow. He's had a fine rookie season. So goaltending, not an issue. And it could be where Carolina tries to bolster their roster by moving the third stringer on the depth chart currently. And that would be Mr. Reimer. Brock McGinn was hurt on the weekend and joins Teuvo Teravainen on the injured list, leaving a big hole in the right wing. Jesper Fast and Martin Netzkatch had been productive over there in the last 2 weeks, and so that helps alleviate the concerns about the injuries on the right side. I mentioned Brett Pesce. He is continuing a fine role with the 3 helpers last week. He had 3 more the prior week, so that's 6 assists in his last 8 games for his biggest offensive contribution in years, and that's not usually his calling card, as I suggested.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest thing, as you mentioned, though, is getting Peter Mrazek back and available. Reimer and Nedeljkovic stood strong when called upon. But I absolutely agree, Paul. I think James Reimer will be receiving plenty of calls about him and whether or not the team is willing to part ways with him and what their asking price is. For the Calgary Flames, they played a couple fewer games because of cancellations with Vancouver, but it was a bad week for them as they went 0-3. Look, this is not the time to be falling apart for the Flames. You have an opportunity to maybe challenge here, but there's just no production coming out of them. You look at goals, nobody with more than one goal in those three games. Mangiapane got one, Tkachuk, Nordstrom, Lindholm and Stone. And so really, I mean, Johnny Gaudreau, one assist, not good enough. Backlund, one assist in two games, good enough. And of course, Giordano, one assist in three games. Again, just not good enough from the guys that need to be producing for this club. It's not happening. They shouldn't be having Milan Lucic as one of their leading offensive producers in any week. If they want to actually be a successful team, it seems that the sheen from having a new coach has worn off in Calgary.
Absolutely, and you pointed at the right part of the team. The offense has just disappeared. 23 goals scored in the last 11 games. That's not going to get it done unless you're in a soccer league, let alone the NHL, partner. And Matthew Tkachuk is finding his way into the coach's doghouse, I think, because he was one of the lowest guys in terms of a total playing time that I saw in last night's game, and that's not good news because he's normally supposed to be one of the guys that's a heart and soul leader type in this franchise, and it's not happening right now, and they look like they're going to be on the outside looking in to the North Division playoffs. The Chicago Blackhawks are just a little bit on the outside after being on the inside of the playoff race for much of the season. They dropped a fifth in the Central with a 1-2 week, highlighted by only two assists from Connor Murphy, but yet that was among the leaders in terms of the offense generated here, so you can tell that offense a bit of a concern. Great news for them, though. Kirby Dach is back and healthy and immediately slotted back into a top six center role since coming off the IR 5 games ago. The production has been a little bit spotty, only two assists over his last three outings, but I think he's starting to look comfortable again and ready to take on a full workload going forward. So might be a good low DFS option until he starts to get noticed more and more. Dylan Strome, a guy who normally plays in the middle of the ice, has been flipped to the wing and bounced around the lineup here, currently listed as right wing on the second line, having scored 2 goals last week, is a guy that I have plenty of time for in the Chicago situation, developing as one of the core pieces there as we look ahead to better days in the Hawks' future. Lankinen has been inconsistent in goal in recent weeks, following up a nice stretch with 2 ordinary starts last week, 7 goals against on only 52 shots. That has to be a bit of a concern. They need better goaltending than that if we want to get back into the playoff hunt in the Central Division.
Well, and I think one piece that they added here is going to go underappreciated. They brought back Vinny Hinostroza via trade, a pretty minor trade by all accounts. They gave up a minor league player in Brad Morrison to get him. But this is a guy who's been with the organization. He understands this team and I think can really hit the ground running. I know there's been a lot of changeover since he left a couple of years ago, but I would not be surprised to see Hinostroza take on a top six role for them. And really, if they make the playoffs, don't be surprised to look back and see that move is what kind of put them over the edge. Now, does it make them a playoff contender or a Stanley Cup contender, rather? No chance, in my opinion. But does it get them over the hump from being the fifth team in the division to fourth? It certainly might. And it's a move to kind of watch and look back on, in my opinion. In Columbus, they're going to probably look back on a lot of things this season and try and figure out what went wrong. This week didn't help as they went 1-3. Zach Werenski leading the way with 2 goals and 2 assists. Look, you got to love having a defenseman racking up points at a point per game pace, but you shouldn't be leading your team, especially when you've got guys like Max Domi, who we've talked about ad nauseum, Patrick Laine, pointless in those 4 games last week. And I would be surprised if he figures it out with this team at this point in the season. I don't know that, you know, he's going to be an RFA at the end of the year. And I just don't know that anybody else is going to want to take on what's, you know, slowly but surely becoming quite the project in his game, and trying to figure out what you have to do to motivate him. The billing seems to be, and this carries over from Winnipeg, is that Patrick Laine can't succeed without top players to play alongside. He you know, pardon my French here, but he bitched and moaned when he was with, you know, Winnipeg, anytime they took him off the line with Scheifele and Wheeler. And so finally they moved him out. He comes into Columbus. He's not going to get better line mates in Columbus. I mean, it's, let's just call a spade here. And I think, you know, it's showing in his production. And so what do you do? Do you try and trade him to a team that maybe has the guys that he wants to play with, but then you're stuck putting him with those guys and you can't shuffle him around. So this is really becoming a headache, and one that I'm sure John Tortorella is sick of dealing with at this point.
You know what? It's funny you mentioned the likes of Domi and Laine. They're guys that the future should be pinned on the future of the Jackets should be pinned on their success, but neither one of them is doing much of anything. And the guy that's normally central to the heart and soul nature of team sentiment and team spirit, Nick Foligno, instead he's the guy that's the subject of trade talks, as he's a little bit older and on an expiring contract with a $5.5 million contract hit. That's big money, and teams are going to have a tough time squeezing that in to their playoffs, pre-playoff runs. But a guy who I think could certainly add so much to a lineup with his physicality and the way that he brings it every night. It's too bad it hasn't translated to the rest of this roster this season, and a large reason why they've taken a major step back overall. The Colorado Avalanche, they took a major step forward, AJ. We're doing some great segues here on this show. 3-0 was their record last week, and they climbed back into top spot in the West Division. Jonas Johansson, a recent acquisition from Buffalo, got in a first start and actually won it with a 2-goals-against effort, backed by the prolific offense here. We talked about several of the big guns ad nauseum, but it was lesser lights like Burakovsky with 3 points and Nichushkin with 3 points who helped this team to their perfect record last week. They're set at scoring line center positions here, we know that, but have to be a little bit disappointed, actually, with the lack of production from one Tyson Yost, who we have slammed a few times this year. We're looking back at him now, AJ, only 8 points in 35 games played. Even the trainer would get 8 points in 35 games here with all the talent that's out here. I can't understand why a guy who was highly touted out of junior is having trouble finding his way. On the flip side, or in addition to that, Brendan Saad with only 1 goal in his last 10 games played, maybe losing grip on his left wing scoring line role. Nichushkin and Compher are options that may be considered. Nichushkin certainly, based on last week, should get a look, and Compher has had experience in that situation, so keep an eye on the fluid left wing side. We haven't talked much about Cale Makar, but I can tell you he's looking like he's at the top of his game recently with 10 points in the last 10 outings, and he's hardly being talked about, clearly still among the top scoring defensemen when healthy, so it could affect his DFS prices going forward. Keep an eye on that, because he looks to be one of the top scoring defensemen in the landscape once again.
I have to wonder, you know, what, if anything, Colorado is going to do in terms of the trade deadline here. Look, getting Matt Calvert back will bolster the bottom six. They don't need to touch his defense, that's for sure. I mean, Bowen Byram will be back in a couple of days. And really, their top four is a pretty solid, you know, four-pack here of Garrard, Graves, Makar, and Taves. So you have to wonder, maybe a depth winger. Potentially, they have the cap space to make it work when you factor in LTIR with both Eric Johnson and Pavel Francouz being unavailable there. So that's maybe what they do. But is it, you know, is it one of those situations where it's just too much of a headache and you have to give up too much? Because this isn't a team that's going to be able to, one, even fit it. But two, do you really need to go out and get like a top six guy? Probably not. Maybe a third line winger. You know, you mentioned Brendan Saad kind of slumping. He did go get a goal last night, so maybe that's a sign of things to come here for them. So I expect Colorado to be pretty quiet on the deadline here. I think that Johansson move is probably going to be the only one we really see. In Dallas, the moves are going to be the other way, as I anticipate the Stars will sell at the deadline here, being sixth in the Central, and another disappointing week at 1-2-1. This has been a team that just, you know, every time I want to trust them, you know, last year was the one year I was like, oh yeah, Dallas, they haven't been really living up to the standards. I don't think they'll do so this year. And then last year they succeed. So then I buy in, and this year they're back to their disappointing ways for me. I just can't seem to figure out this team on a long-term basis. In terms of the net mining, it's been a little more Jake Ottinger than Anton Khudobin. They've been splitting it of late. Ottinger 1-1 with a .963 save percentage in two opportunities. Khudobin 1-0-1 with a .917. So, you know, goaltending seems decent enough. It's the scoring that continues to be the problem with this club, and I think a reason they're going to start selling guys off. You know, I mentioned previously with Columbus, getting production out of defensemen is great, but you don't want them leading the way. Well, two of their top three producers last week were from the blue line in Miro Heiskanen with one goal and three assists, and John Klingberg with three assists. You know, Jamie Benn seems to have woken up a little bit with two goals over that stretch, but really – they just can't seem to put it all together, and I expect some guys to be maybe shipped out. Andrew Cogliano could offer some appeal as a bottom six option. Same with Blake Como for in terms of guys that maybe will get their names called on the phones there.
Yeah, the trouble here is that they've had too many guys in sick bay and on the IR for much of the season. Sagan, of course, out of lineup all year. Radulov in and out. But most recently, Joel Kavaranta and Jason Dickinson, two youngsters who are key parts of this offense and will be for several years to come, find themselves on the IR as well. You mentioned inconsistencies throughout the roster. Consider first-liners. Joe Pavelski, only two assists in his last six games played. But meanwhile, Jason Robertson had a fine week and is scoring very prolifically on the left side of that same line. So they just can't get all the oars rowing in the same direction here. And that's a large part of the reason for the lack of success in Dallas. Up next, we talk about the Detroit Red Wings, mired in eighth place in the Central Division. 1-2-1 was their record last week. Thomas Greiss was in net for all the games. And consider this, AJ, only one win despite allowing seven goals against. So guess what? This club is still goal-challenged. Leader in terms of offense for the week was Vlad Nemestikov with only two assists. With two recent injuries to Bobby Ryan and Robbie Fabry, who could both return within a week, that hampered the offense last week, but maybe there's help on the way. It afforded usually a checker type, and Adam Ernie, the opportunity to rise into a top six role. He produced two goals and one assist in his expanded role over the last three games to lead the offense along with Nemestikov. The Wings would love to see Jonathan Bernier get healthy enough to play before the trade deadline, because he, again, is a number of among a small number of goalies who could be sought after to help other teams and could return something significant to the Red Wings and continue their fill the need for development here going forward. Prior to his injury, in fact, Bernier was the top trade consideration, in my opinion, of any goalie that might be available prior to the trade deadline. So keep an eye on that situation. Youngster Michael Rasmussen is another guy who's making the most of his promotion time amid the uncertainty in Detroit, moving up to the center position on the second scoring line, compiling 3 points in the last five games played. I think he'll be a fixture here for years to come, and he's getting a baptism under fire right now.
Well, I think the biggest thing is, you know, Bobby Ryan getting back on the ice for them, because at, you know, 35 years of age, yeah, I'm sure they'd love to keep him beyond this season, but he's a $1 million contract. There are a lot of teams that could take that on, and a lot of teams, I think, that could be bolstered by having him. That's a top nine winger to immediately add to your mix, possibly even top six, depending on the team you're looking at here. You know, and they are clearly building for the future. You look at their draft picks this upcoming year, one first rounder, three in the second round, two in the third round. If they could maybe snag like a third rounder or even a second rounder for Bobby Ryan, think about the long-term impact here. This is a Detroit team that could be sitting potentially with four second round picks and a first, you know, a first overall pick that's in the top of the draft. Maybe there's some movement there that they could move up. And, you know, with that bevy of second rounders, then they're picking twice in the first round next year as a potential long-term building here. I really think they need to, you know, consider taking anything they can get at this point for guys that are being asked about. Maybe not Robbie Fabry. He is just 25 years of age, so he can be part of your building for the future around Dylan Larkin and Anthony Mantha. But I really would consider shipping off Bobby Ryan if you can get anything close to a second or even a third rounder for him. In terms of our next club, we'll talk about the Edmonton Oilers, a 2-1-1 week for them. And we're finally, you know, after, you know, some dry spells, if you will, Leon Draisaitl, three assists in those three games. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, 2 points. Connor McDavid, 2 points. I think that's decent enough. Obviously, you know, you expect these guys to be racking up multiple points every single night. But they're sitting in second. They snagged, you know, in those four games, they got 5 points out of it. And really, it's, you know, it's not a big deal, in my opinion, if they have, you know, what you would otherwise consider maybe quote unquote a down week for them. You know, these guys are going to be on top of the scoring race. And so I wouldn't be too worried about any of that situation there. And I really think Edmonton, while they could maybe figure things out enough to challenge, I don't want to jinx you, Paul, but I just see Tampa or Toronto rather being too far ahead at this point for these two teams to track them down. So the priority for Edmonton is just finishing, you know, slightly above Winnipeg. So you would get four games in a first round series at home.
You got me smiling like the butcher's dog here, AJ, when you make references to the Leafs being home and cooled out, but I'm not counting anything right now. The Florida Panthers aren't counting on anything either. They moved up to first place in the Central Division, overtaking Tampa with a 4-0 week last week. That makes five straight wins overall. Alex Wenberg and Gustav Forsling with 4 points each leading the offense. Owen Tippett adding two assists as well. This team is rolling on the ice, but I was most intrigued by an off-ice move here that saw Spencer Knight sign his entry-level deal. This guy is a very highly regarded goalie prospect, AJ, and there's already a pretty solid goaltending situation in place as Bobrovsky seems to be on top of his game, and Chris Driedger's been a really good soldier here. Consider that he's, for 2 years now, been a solid backup in his last 29 appearances. A goals against average of 2.05 and a save percentage north of 93%. Those are amazing numbers. And you wonder, with Knight's signing, are they going to jump the gun and see if they can move Driedger, or do they hold him onto him and give Knight a chance to apply his trade at in the minor league level? He's such a great prospect, though. I don't think his stay down there will be too long. So look for a goaltending move in the Florida mix within the next 6 months, I would say. And maybe if somebody makes a tasty trade deadline offer, it could happen much sooner than that. Most surprised as well by a move up front where we see a former Leaf farmhand, Mason Marchment, getting left wing minutes on the top scoring line. The guy hasn't scored a goal in the last 15 games played, but by all accounts and the clippings that I'm reading, the coaches love this guy's work ethic and what he brings to the game. Maybe he's opening up space for the wingers and centers that he's playing with in a top six role, but right now I see him as nothing more than a net front presence. Hasn't proven to be a scoring type, that's for sure. I look at a guy like Frank Vetrano, who got 3 goals and 2 assists last week, and he'd be my choice for an expanded role on left wing in a top six environment, but he's still mired in third line minutes and some time on the special teams, but he's been a power play specialist for a few years now and a nice guy to have in tow over here. The news is a bit sour on the back end, of course, with Aaron Ekblad out for the year, but Mackenzie Weegar has stepped up with more minutes played and, excuse me, responded with a 2-goal, 2-assist effort last week.
Yeah, I think the thing you talk about with Marchment, you know, about the team trusting him and the coaching staff liking him, that's further enforced by the fact that they signed him to a 1-year a contract extension yesterday. So clearly they see something here that maybe the rest of us aren't in you know, kind of long-term projections here. And I think you have to consider trading Driedger right now. I don't know why this guy would re-sign with Florida when you consider Sergei Bobrovsky is locked up at $10 million a year for the next 5 years. You're a red-hot commodity. So if Florida allows you to hit free agency, there's no way I'm signing with the Panthers next season. I'm going to go somewhere where I have a clear chance to start and a team that's already, find a team that's not already committed over 12% of their cap to one netminder. So they really, I think they have to consider trading him for whatever they can get. Unfortunately, while Driedger, I think, has a solid market, midseason goalie trades, I think, are difficult to pull off. So I would tamper down the expectations among the Panthers faithful as to what you're going to get back for Chris Driedger. I don't think it's going to be a bad amount, but I think you're going to look at it and maybe be a little disappointed. But think about it in the context of he's a UFA at the end of the year. He has no reason to return to Florida if he wants to be an NHL starter. And so you're kind of – other teams know that too. And, another team could say, well, fine, they're putting their heels in. I'm wanting a first-round pick for Chris Driedger. I'm not going to pay that. And so I'll wait until the offseason and then try and sign him. So just tamper expectations, Florida fans, on what the return is going to be here. In Los Angeles, they'll see – potentially some return as they are slated, in my opinion, to ship out some more pieces. We saw them bring in a guy in Brendan Lemieux, which was a bit surprising. They did that minor league flop with Christian Wolanin and Michael Amadio. But I think overall, this is a team that is going to be selling hard into the stretch here. Some names that I think would make sense, whether or not they'll be sent out, are, of course, Alex Iafallo. His cap hit is just $2.4 million, so relatively manageable. He'll be a UFA. He's only 27, so you can get some value there. Beyond that, they don't really have any immediate UFAs on the list. They've got a number of RFAs. I've seen people suggest Andreas Athanasiou, but I think they like the fact that he's, kind of controlled with that RFA. Of course, the flip side is true that they could get a solid return from him. I've suggested in the past maybe they look at trading Jonathan Quick and seeing what they can do there. Paul, are there any other names that stand out to you on this list of potential guys headed out of Los Angeles?
Well, I've hammered hard on the goalies in a couple of circumstances of trade possibilities. I don't see Quick being very easy to move. He's got 2 years left with a $5.8 million cap hit. I don't think that the Kings are going to eat half of that contract and make it a little more palatable to other teams acquiring a 35-year-old goalie whose game is in decline, and he's been passed by Cal Peterson. And that's one of the positive developments. I look at this as a rebuilding club, and they have to look at their situation and say, we were competitive for the first half of the season. They're fading a little bit now, but I think trading some of the fringe players that are getting on in years is the way to go to create some space going forward for the younger guys to get more reps, and that's really the name of the game in Los Angeles. So they'll try and move some pieces for sure, but I just don't know how marketable some of those pieces will be at this trade deadline with the competition around the league and being thin, I think. Minnesota, this is a team that's kind of taken on the opportunity that existed in a Western Division below the first two teams. They are third right now with a 2-1-1 week. Cam Talbot in goal for three of the games, posted two wins and only six goals against. So that's a pretty good 1-2 that they have in the nets there with the youngster behind him. Jordan Greenway, three assists, a strong contributor in a top six role of late. Joel Eriksson-Ek with 3 points of his own as well, coming into his own as a fine young centerman. Marcus Johansson has played six games since coming off the IR, and he's seen his minutes rise and return to the power play. His productivity has been a little bit lower than expected early on, but I think once he gets a few more reps, he'll be a consistent producer. Matt Zuccarello is a guy that I've talked about a lot when we've talked about Minnesota this year, but my talk has always been tempered by the fact that he just can't stay healthy. He's back on the IR right now, again with no clear timetable due to his current lower body hurt. This is a guy that just can't stay healthy, AJ, and despite his talent, I just can't trust him in season-long formats.
Unfortunately for the Wild, they're dealing with injuries to Marcus Foligno as well, who's expected to be, talked about weeks away. Of course, that was a couple weeks ago, but still no clear update on him. And Zach Parise looks like he'll be back sooner rather than later. He's been activated from the COVID protocol list, but they're still ramping up his conditioning. So he wasn't able to play last night. Perhaps he'll be ready to go on Wednesday. So those injury concerns are there and present, and something that they're going to need to challenge, fight through if they're going to maintain a playoff spot here. I think one kind of DFS tip that I will just toss out there, few players over the last couple of years, in my opinion, have been as streaky as Nick Bjugstad. Well, he had 2 points in his last game, last night, in fact, and so now is probably a good time to hit when the iron is hot, because he's one of those guys that when he's going, you need to use him, but it's very up or down, and right now he seems to be trending up. A team possibly trending down right now is the Montreal Canadiens, a 2-1 week, so certainly good there. But the news coming out last night, Brendan Gallagher broke his thumb in Monday's game and is expected to miss a significant chunk of time here. Weeks is the report, and as we're getting close to the season ending here, you have to wonder if that is going to be a season ending or at least a regular season ending injury for Brendan Gallagher. So they will have to shuffle the deck here and try and find some replacements. I think the obvious choice on that first line is Tyler Toffoli. Josh Anderson I would peg for the second line, and they got Eric Staal played his first game in Montreal last night, picking up the overtime winner. So anybody who doubted me last week when I said Staal was a good addition and thought the old man was ready to be put out to pasture, just look what he did in his first game with the team. He's slotting into a second-line center role, and I think they're going to need a player like him to kind of weather the storm without Gallagher. They also Joel Armia is also unavailable as he's on the COVID list right now. So all the additions that they've made to be a deep team have paid off here, because you're looking at a fourth line right now of Paul Byron, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, and Michael Frolik, which is a perfectly capable fourth line. The third line, not too bad either, with Arturi Lehkonen, Nick Suzuki, and Corey Perry. So this team has depth to weather the storm, I think, with those guys out. And if they can get either one back, in the next couple of weeks or even for the postseason, I think there's your trade deadline, your next trade deadline acquisition. I'll use air quotes on that. The addition just by getting their guys back and healthy.
Yeah, any deals the Canadians make will have to be money in, equaling money out, because they're so close against the cap. It's too bad because they also have a whole mitt full of draft picks to move around in anticipation of a possible busy deadline if they had a little more flexibility. So we'll look for the situation to unfold in Montreal prior to next week's trade deadline, see if they further bolster the squad. But a fine addition in Staal, as you suggested. New Jersey, mired in seventh place in the Eastern Division. 0-1-2 was the record last week. They were led offensively by Travis Zajac, who is a low-end DFS value play as he's going on a hot streak right now with 3 goals last week. Michael McLeod chipped in with 2 goals as well. Ryan Murray holding the hot hand at the back end with 6 assists. Nick Merkley, a youngster who was recently a high draft pick, getting 2 helpers as well. In the Nets, Mackenzie Blackwood back in top form. His record is 3-1-2 in his last 6 games played, while allowing only 14 goals against. That'll keep teams in contention every night with a modicum of offensive production. They're certainly not getting that from one Andreas Johnsson. Only 1 assist in his last 13 games played. He's lost his top 6 winger role and reprising a third line role that I saw far too often for a guy with his skill set during his time in Toronto. Kokkonen did not do much with his promotion in place of Johnsson, however, being blanked in his last 5 games played. So that's a bit of a black hole on the left side. And in terms of trade possibilities, Kyle Palmieri continues to be the subject of those trade rumors, linking him, in fact, with one specific team, and that's the Boston Bruins. He was even held out of recent games amid speculation that he could be moved, and prior to that was on a pretty good streak with 4 goals in his last 8 games played.
Yeah, boy, would that be a pretty significant move to trade away a guy like Kyle Palmieri, who's, you know, really been, you know, since he came over from Anaheim, been one of the key players for this team for several years. And so to see him, you know, heading to another NHL team would certainly be, you know, disappointing for Devils fans. But you have to consider the long term impact here of, you know, what you can get from him, a UFA deal. No reason that they can't retain half of the salary for the remainder of this season, and that'll expand the pool of teams that would be in contention for him when you consider it going from 4.6 to 2.3 in terms of cap hit. Obviously, Travis Zajac is another name that could come up, another guy that's going to be a UFA. And I think stockpiling for the future is the key for New Jersey and continuing to build through the draft at this point. In Nashville, a 2-1 week finds them in 4th place in the Central. UC Saros with 2 wins and 5 goals allowed, including a shutout over that stretch. And the youngster, Eli Tolvanen, continues to produce with 2 goals and 1 assist. The concern, you know, they've got Victor Arvidsson was forced out of Saturday's game. He's considered day-to-day right now until we know more. Philip Forsberg is considered week-to-week, so you have to imagine his absence will continue for a little bit longer here. And while that has created an opportunity for Tolvanen to be in a top 6 role, it's obviously a concern when you have, you know, more injuries starting to pile up. They're already thin down the middle with Brad Richardson and Matt Duchene out, although Matt Duchene hasn't offered much in terms of offense for a number of years. So maybe addition by subtraction, not having him in the lineup and being forced to utilize him. But all things considered, I worry about these 2 injuries putting just a little bit too much pressure on the depth here, not to mention a number of guys still out on the back end, including Ryan Ellis.
On the island in New York, the Islanders still in the hunt in the middle of a very congested East Division standings. 2-1 was their record last week. Anthony Beauvillier leading the offense with 2 goals and 1 helper. Jordan Eberle with a pair of goals, pair of assists. Josh Bailey with a goal and 2 helpers. Odd-looking first line, though, for me, with Komarov still in the top left-wing role, despite only 2 assists in his last 5 games played. However, you got to look at what his center's doing most recently, and that's the talk of the league, as Matt Barzal has 9 points in that same stretch. Center on the second line, Brock Nelson, snapped his 7-game goalless drought last week, so the 2 offensive lines are humming here, and the defensive structure's in place. I don't think anybody wants to play a team like this if it's going at the top of their game with the playoffs around the corner. Ross Johnson is the latest left-winger to go on the injury list, however, on the left side, and that's a bit of a concern. Michael Dalcoli is skating and could be in line for a top 6 role just by the fact that he's one of the guys that's healthy on that flank. They'll be looking to bolster that group at the trade deadline. That's the one weakness I see here. Beauvillier, as I mentioned, has risen from this group to score 6 of his 8 goals in the past 8 games played, so at least that's a bit of a balm for the lack of production on the port side overall.
I think it's important that, you know, as much as we highlight players doing well, we need to point out when things aren't going as well. And that's the case for Jean-Gabriel Pageau. He's on a 4-game pointless streak and has really cooled off over that stretch. I think, again, something I've talked about in the past, the biggest concern for me over this drought is only 2 shots on goal in those 4 games. That's pretty disappointing in terms of what you want, especially when you consider there's plenty of power play ice time coming for him in those opportunities. So I don't think it'll be a long-term thing. I would expect him to get back sooner rather than later. But it is important to note that he is slumping pretty good right now and not doing the things that I personally view as a way to get out of that slump. The Rangers are not ready to call it in the East Division with a 2-0-1 week. They will fight to the end here. I think what you're going to see in terms of trade deadline for them, you know, because it's only a week away here, less than a week away, I don't anticipate that they're going to be huge players on the market because I don't think they want to sell what they have. They've got a strong core here of young players, but it seems too early to buy on a team that's, you know, rebuilding, retooling, whatever you want to call it. So I expect them to be overall pretty quiet. You know, there's, you know, the move for Lemieux was a pretty minor one. And honestly, I think it was just a way to create a roster spot for the youngster, Vitali Kratsov. So they got something out of that and were able to create the roster space. But overall, I expect them to be pretty slow the rest of the way. And I think they'll be a hard out for all the teams in the East here. And if they're not a factor directly in the postseason, I certainly think they'll be a factor in terms of who they potentially beat down the stretch here.
Yeah, you kind of panned the Ottawa Senators in the same way off the top of the show, AJ, but they went 1-1 last week again, continuing a streak where they've been a tough out for the teams in the North Division. They're still mired in seventh place, don't get me wrong, but teams can't go against Ottawa and completely think it's going to be an easy night, unless you're the Edmonton Oilers, who have completely owned them this year. The rest of the teams in the division have had a lot of trouble with the team in the Canadian nation's capital. Connor Brown's a big reason why, chipping in with two goals again last week, and if Getty Dadonov is another guy who expects to lead this offense, and he's done it in fits and starts this season. Last week was one of those better ones with him getting two goals as well. One guy who's emerged for me on the back end, really solidifying the defense, is Mike Riley. He's added a bit of offense to his game, which is predicated around defensive structure. I like the way he's playing, and they also get Matt Murray back in net, back and activated from the IR. He's had an up-and-down season injury-wise, and that's a real shame, because they're paying him big money, and he hasn't been around much, to be quite frank. Tim Stützle was the subject of a lot of highlight reels earlier on, but less visible in the last six games, only two assists. Maybe he's hit a bit of a rookie wall. I notice a lower a shot on goal rate for him as well in that stretch, so that's a bit of an alarming development for me. Artem Anisimov had three assists in his first game back after an eight-game injury absence. He's another guy that certainly would have been welcome as a top six player if he could stay healthy, but that's been the knock on him for a long while. His return, however, should shuffle the top nine forwards, and I think Nick Paul could be a casualty there. I don't know how this guy's been staying in a top six role or even top nine, AJ. Only five helpers in his last 21 games played overall.
In the city of brotherly love, the Flyers went 1-1-1 last week, picked up another overtime win last night, as they've been riding a lot of Brian Elliott, you know, to give Carter Hart some time to get things right. Hart's lone appearance in their last six games came in a pretty decent outing, gave up just two goals on 24 shots in a overtime losing effort to the Islanders. So certainly I think they, you know, are seeing some signs of life there in terms of what they're getting out of him. He's going to get the nod tonight on the second of a back-to-back. So I think his, you know, drafted percentage could be a little bit down, considering the fact that, you know, one, he's been struggling a little bit of late. Two, they're going up against the Bruins. But if you're looking for maybe a contrarian option, I think Hart offers some intrigue in that. You know, certainly if it goes wrong for you, it's going to go wrong big time. You know, there's a potential there that the Bruins could just light him up. But I do see it as a potential contrarian play if you're looking to maybe be the one guy that trusts in the youngster from Philadelphia.
In Pittsburgh, they are third in the East Division, a very competitive East, I keep saying. They were 2-1 last week. Jared McCann picking up two goals as he slotted in to that second-line center role very seamlessly as usual. Mike Matheson with 4 points on the week. Marino on defense with two helpers. Brian Rust, however, is a guy I want to focus on. AJ here, get your slant. He had been a great DFS value for a six-game point streak, but last week was blanked over three games. Still looks to me like he's a lock in that first-line right-wing role alongside Sidney Crosby, though. They have a very good partnership over a couple of years now, and I don't think that this recent slump is messing with that. Tristan Jarry missed the last two games with an upper body injury, but should be able to return later this week. Maybe you have an insight there as well. A bit of positive news for your club, though. After missing a month, Jason Tucker back as left wing on the second line, had a goal and seven shots on goal over his three games played last week, and they certainly are well happy to have him back in tow. It comes at a time, though, when Kasperi Kapanen's going out while he's coming in. He's expected to miss a few weeks with a lower body injury, and that means more top 6 minutes for Evan Rodriguez. And I'm telling you, buddy, I think they need an upgrade there.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing with everything. So I'll start with Rust. You know, the Penguins have become a one-line team, essentially, without Evgeny Malkin. So the opposition are able to really focus in on Crosby, Gensel, and Rust. So I attribute the little bit of slump for him just to that. I don't expect that it'll carry forward long-term. One benefit that has come from having Malkin, Kapanen, and now Brandon Tanev have picked up an injury Saturday, and he's week to week as well, is the fact that Jared McCann and Jason Zucker seem to be really having a strong partnership. And I stress, if the Penguins can actually get healthy and have Malkin and Kapanen back together, I think it's worth considering that you put McCann and Zucker as your third line anchors in their tandem. I agree. I still think maybe you find an upgrade. One name that we've talked about, maybe they could get Bobby Ryan in here and go, you know, Malkin, Kapanen, Bobby Ryan on the second line. I feel comfortable having Evan Rodriguez in a third line role, continuing to play with McCann and Zucker. So I think there's some options here in what they can do, but it's all going to depend on when. I don't think it's an if. I think it's a when they get Malkin and Kasperi Kapanen back together, because those two had really been playing well. Another team playing well right now is the San Jose Sharks, who went 4-0 last week. And I can't believe we're saying this, but Marty Jones, four games started, four wins, six goals allowed, including a shutout, was named one of the stars of the week for the division. And really, that is quite the turnaround for him based on what has been happening of late for his career. Is it something that's going to hold on? I don't know, but six wins in his last seven games, they've turned to him as the preferred choice right now, riding the hot hand over Devan Dubnyk. And so I think they'll continue to monitor that situation, in terms of fantasy and DFS value. I don't foresee that being anywhere close to enough to get them into a playoff position here, but certainly worth maybe picking your spot depending on who they're matching up with to use Marty Jones before he cools off.
Yeah, and keeping with the theme that I started earlier on, we haven't talked about goalies for a bit, but Devan Dubnyk is a guy that should be sought after in trade talks before the deadline. His contract is expiring. It's a very low cap hit relative to some of the other guys that are out there. So you might look at that as a situation that unfolds. But this team has a lot more structure at the center position since Couture and Hertl are back in as the 1-2. Hertl looks healthy again, and he's driving that second line. And Rudy Balcers has become somewhat relevant, playing well and being productive on his right wing of late. The St. Louis Blues are a team that I thought was safe in fourth place, but they dropped two games last week and fell out of a playoff position, winless in their last six games. That's a trouble spot that I didn't see coming, but it's largely attributed to the struggles that Jordan Binnington continues to have. Consider he's allowed 15 goals against in his last five starts, the save percentage at a lousy 88.5%. So he's got to ramp that up and drag his team back into the playoffs with a much better effort than that. They got to be concerned about Rob Thomas. He's been held scoreless in six games played since his return. They need him to get going to bolster some secondary scoring from the bottom six here. Vlad Tarasenko is now playing alongside, trying to spark that unit, in fact. And on defense, I'm concerned about Justin Falk. He's in a funk right now. No points and a minus six in his last nine outings. He's playing like he did in stretches last year, where he looked at that cap hit and thought, boy, oh boy, he's really not returning anything and must be in the doghouse here. Jordan Kyrou, a guy who, one of the youngsters who's come through for them earlier on in the season, all of a sudden scoreless in his last six games played, has seen his minutes drop and could soon lose that top six winger role here. So a lot of things in flux in St. Louis as they have fallen out of a playoff spot.
Well, and I think it's interesting to look at their record since Tarasenko came back in. They've got 12 losses and 2 wins, as best as I can count them here. And that's, you know, there might be some overtime losses in there that I'm not seeing offhand here, but that's pretty big concern for a team going south when you add a guy in like Tarasenko. And it's certainly not his fault. He's got 8 points in those 14 games, including a trio of power play points, consistent big minutes for them as well over that stretch. But it just goes to show you that sometimes chemistry can just get really wonky when you add in a guy, even a guy as good as Tarasenko. And so it's certainly concerning that his return to the lineup has not been for the better for the St. Louis Blues. Tampa Bay has fallen to second in the Central after a 2-2 week compared to Florida. Ross Colton, 2 goals. Andreas Bergman, 2 assists over that stretch. Obviously, the wait here is for when they're going to get Nikita Kucherov back, and you have to, you have to compare the two. Is the addition of Nikita Kucherov going to be everything that they hope it to be? I would imagine they think they will get better for having him, and it would. I'm not suggesting they're worse by any stretch of the imagination, but you have to compare these two scenarios where you get arguably the best player on the team back and things don't go well right away. And it would be certainly a bad timing to see that happen in a first round playoff series. That's for sure.
Well, and they have to be concerned about the injuries on the back end, AJ. Let's face it. Jan Ruta and Erik Cernak have been a part of their structure for the last year and a half, and they're both out of the lineup right now, and that's meaning that they're pressing into service some minor leaguers and Andreas Borgman and Ben Thomas to log those third pairing minutes, putting a lot of pressure on the top four, which includes youngster Cal Foot, who's just getting his feet wet, pardon the pun, in that depth chart there. So challenged on the defensive side, they'll have to do money in, money out to bolster their team. They haven't got a lot of cap flexibility, so we'll see what they can do to make their situation better, but they're counting on things to come out of the infirmary to improve their lot, I think, better than any other option. We get to the Maple Leafs, AJ, and I'm pretty happy because they're undefeated now in their last 8 games played, despite the fact that their presumptive starting goalie is on the sidelines for all of it. And Michael Hutchinson being very serviceable, third option here, pressed into duty with 2 starts last week, allowing only 5 goals against. But the big story is Jack Campbell, undefeated in a club record tying 9 straight games, is his lot. And the goals against is a sparkling 1.5. And the save percentage is just otherworldly at about 94%. So these are fantasy numbers, and right now he's delivering them in real time. And I couldn't be happier to see that development. But it kind of tempers the rumors of a need for a goaltending addition at the trade deadline, because I think the time off is certainly going to help Freddie Anderson. I haven't heard anything conclusive yet about his status, but I think he's coming along. And certainly they seem to be in good hands right now with Campbell and Hutchinson. They would love to see Anderson get into a game before the trade deadline, but I don't know that that's possible. So it'll be a very interesting way to see how this team handles the trade deadline. Maybe do they bolster the offense? I already said Nick Foligno would be a guy that I would love to see in tow. But they also have to be heartened by the fact that Alex Galchenyuk, who struggled in the last 4 cities that he's played in, looks to have found a home with the Leafs on a second line. He got his first goal last week, playing on a second line with John Tavares and Willie Nylander. I don't think he could have asked for more than that. I certainly like what I've seen from him. And then another guy who's come out of the infirmary most recently is Wayne Simmonds, and he got his first goal since coming off the injured list, and looks pretty solid in a third line role and support on a second power play unit. And that power play unit finally broke a goose egg of 11 games played. It's funny, AJ, last night they gave up a shorthanded goal, immediately called a timeout on that same power play and proceeded to go score the go-ahead goal, and they didn't look back after that. So that could be a real key moment for the Leafs going forward as they put some distance between themselves and their pursuers comfortably atop the North Division.
Well, and to your point, Paul, they continue to get production out of Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews, who currently find themselves 4th and 5th respectively in the overall league points race. And that's despite not doing much on the power play of late. Matthews sitting at 27 goals With a guy like Connor McDavid behind him, it's way too early to call him any sort of lock to win the Rocket. But it's certainly his trophy to lose at this point, with that. And if they can get the power play going as well, that's only going to improve his chances of picking up some hardware at the end of the season. We'll touch briefly on Vancouver here. No games last week. We talked about the fact that they've got 17 players on the COVID list. And so really, you just have to hope for all their staff, and players that nobody has any, severe, symptoms or anything like that, and that everybody can come out of this for the better. But, I think the schedule is what's going to be important to look at once health is taken care of, and when they can play again, I think remains up in the air.
Las Vegas, second in the Western Division, AJ, after a loser week, 1-2-1 was the record. Robin Leonard gets into a couple of games and picks up a win, only 3 goals against. Looks like offense a bit of an issue here of late. Nosek leading the team offensively with 2 goals and 1 assist. Keegan Kolesar with a couple of assists. And Zach Whitecloud, a third-pairing defenseman, has missed the last 2 games here with an upper body injury but should return next week. You notice I'm not mentioning any of the big guns because they're misfiring a little bit of late. Chandler Stevenson was suspended for 3 games for his high elbow hit. That means that Cody Glass is replacing him as a top six center going forward. Even tough guy Ryan Reeves has missed his last 3 games with a lower body injury. The goalie situation looks like it's going to be a split going forward between Fleury and Leonard as they short things out, headed toward what they hope is another long playoff run.
But you absolutely have it, right there, Paul, that the offense is the problem. Alex Pietrangelo pointless in 3 games. Match Pacioretty pointless in their 4 games last week. Mark Stone had 1 assist. Riley Smith had 1 goal. As you said, there's just not any production coming out of the star players here. And that is a big concern. Now, fortunately, they're a team that has a pair of netminders who are definitely 1A and 1B. And so I think that can obviously help them avoid any sort of significant drop here, because both of those netminders are certainly capable of winning a 1-0 game, 2-1 game. They both have the talent there to pull that off. And so I think it's important to watch. The offense needs to come around long term, but for right now, I think they're doing okay. In Washington, okay is probably the best way to describe last week. 2-2 week, the net mining a bit uneven for me. Vitek Vanecek 1-1 with a .879 save percentage. Ilya Samsonov also 1-1 with a slightly worse .841 save percentage. So there are some cracks there in the armor, if you will, for the Washington Capitals. Of course, the offense is not really a huge issue. John Carlson picks up 3 goals and 1 assist. Alex Ovechkin, 1 goal, 3 assists. TJ Oshie, a trio of goals. And that's a credit to him, having been moved kind of all over this lineup recently, including playing some center. Right now, they've got him on the top line, along with Lars Eller and Alex Ovechkin. So a bit of a blender here, and something that you're going to want to watch in terms of DFS. Ovi, Eller, Oshie is your top line, Sherry, Backstrom, and Wilson as a second, and they've got Kuznetsov kind of anchoring a third line in an attempt to maybe spread out a bit of the scoring here in the U.S. Capitol.
And finally, in Winnipeg, this team stumbled, I'll say, to a 1-1-1 record. Connor Hellebuyck in the nets for his last 6 starts, giving this team a chance to win every night, only allowing 8 goals against. Mark Scheifele picking up 2 goals, 2 helpers. Kyle Connor with 3 assists. Ehlers with 3 assists. So the big guns are doing their thing, except for one who prior to last night was struggling. That's Pierre-Luc Dubois, only 1 goal and 1 assist in his last 7 games, but I mentioned it was before last night, and he picked up 2 goals in that game, so hopefully he's off the schneid in that sense. Paul Stastny has been a real revelation for me, not even playing his normal and natural center position. He's on left wing on the second line, but very productive for the Jets with 5 points in his last 7 games played, been a very steady offensive contributor and a good low DFS option. Neil Pionk, on the other hand, on the blue line, normally considered one of the top power players eight quarterbacks in the league, has only one helper in his last 11 games played. So he's seen his DFS value plummet, and he needs to turn it around because this team won't go far unless they get a little production from the back end. It's doubly so when Josh Morrissey has only 1 point in his last six outings. So to me, a bit of a concern on the back end, because you add that to the fact that Nathan Beaulieu underwent surgery for a torn labrum. He's out for the season. You got to believe that the Jets are going to be looking for help on the back end, but their leaders on the blue line have to pick up their game in order for these guys to be a force in the playoffs. AJ, it's time for our weekly look at the DFS landscape. You handle the DraftKings and I handle FanDuel. Why don't you lead us off in terms of what you see ahead of tonight's landscape in the NHL DFS games?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole slate, a big slate of games tonight, and so there's plenty of opportunities to pick and choose your spots. A couple of teams that I like tonight personally, just to do an overarching, and then I'll let you know what players I'm using, are obviously Pittsburgh. I think the Rangers are a tough out, but Pittsburgh has played them well. Buffalo, I think, has a good opportunity. They've been playing better of late, and they're getting New Jersey tonight. Obviously, Tampa Bay is a team to always look at, and then Washington going up against the Islanders are a couple of all the teams that I'm picking my guys from. And I'll start with the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mentioned the kind of connection that Jared McCann and Jason Zucker seem to be having, and so I'm going to use those two guys in combination tonight. I think the Penguins' second line is going to get better matchups against the Rangers than the first line. And these guys aren't going to break the bank. So Jared McCann coming in at 4,400, and then Jason Zucker 3,500 is a good kind of 1-2 punch here for those that tandem. I'll also use a pair of Buffalo Sabres on the top line. Again, I mentioned Casey Mittelstadt getting first line opportunities alongside Taylor Hall. So I'm going to use those two together. Mittelstadt coming in at a bargain 2,800 here. Taylor Hall, because of kind of problems he's had for the whole season, coming in at just 4,500. So really a very cheap set of guys here in my line pairings. And I'll go with one more cheap winger option who's playing top line minutes, and that's Tyler Johnson, 3,800 for the Lightning. I like his price tag again when you consider he's going to play a top line assignment. As my utility guy then, because I've basically saved all of my money finding value in the forward ranks, I am going to use Alexander Ovechkin at 9,100. I think it's a good opportunity for him to score goals. I'll double that up by going John Carlson at 6,900. As I said, he's been red hot of late. I can fit in Victor Hedman, so why not, right? 7,600 for Tampa Bay's power play guy. And then between the nets, as I said, I think Buffalo against New Jersey is a good opportunity. Omark comes in at 7,200, so you're not breaking the bank for a netminder who's got a pretty decent chance to win. So a pretty different strategy here for me, Paul. I don't normally pay up for the top defenseman here, but I started building my lineup. I like the value I could get from plenty of these wingers, and when the money's there, you don't pass on John Carlson and Victor Hedman, that's for sure.
Yeah, in my case, I'm looking at my lineup, and normally I have a couple of stacks that really are the centerpieces. In this case today, though, it's a bit of a grab bag, but I'll try and back it up with reasons why in each pick. I start off the top with a guy that I thought for sure you'd pick tonight at center. I got Sidney Crosby, AJ. I'm taking one of your boys. And he's a guy that I think can be very productive even as a Lone Ranger. He's that good, and he has been for a long while. So sub $8,000, I'll take him every time I can in a matchup that I think could be a high-scoring affair. So hoping that your captain goes off tonight. Thomas Hertl, I mentioned he's a guy that has been central to the success in San Jose when the team is going well. They certainly are right now, and I plug him in against a challenged Anaheim club. I get him for only $6,100. I think that's terrific value. You mentioned in your analysis of Nashville, Eli Tolvanen. This guy's been the hottest of the hot in Nashville, part of a really solid offense that is unfolding there, and against a defensively challenged Detroit Red Wing club that may be seeing the last game of Jonathan Bernier in tow there. I wonder if there'll be a video tribute for him the next time he rolls back into Motor City as he leaves. But in the meantime, I'll go on with my picks. I've got a couple of snipers from Chicago in my lineup against a struggling Dallas club. One of them is Alex DeBrincat at $7,100. He's partnered with Patrick Kane, who I pay $8,000 for, and both of these guys are leaders on the Hawks offense night in, night out. I expect tonight to be no different. Rounding out my offense, I spoke glowingly of Nick Ritchie. I think he's a guy that could have a productive night in what should be an interesting game in Philadelphia against a team that has been mired in with some inconsistency that I didn't expect from the Flyers, but I think the Bruins could really pick them apart tonight. And actually, you can make a case for a Boston stack if you want. I'm doing a mini stack by taking a defenseman of the Bruins, Charlie McAvoy, to be one of my blue liners of choice tonight. He is linchpin of their power play as well, and we know that's going to be productive more often than not. Mikhail Sergachev is a guy that will round out my squad in Tampa. He slots in behind Victor Hedman in terms of power play ice time, and certainly point production from the back end. I get him for only $4,300, and I round it out with a guy that I've never played in DFS Fantasy. That's Marty Jones, because I've panned this guy mercilessly for the last couple of seasons, but he's maybe at the top of his game in that whole time period. And so I'm going to take a shot at him for $7,800. I've had trouble with my goalie picks of late, so I went contrary to my intuition and pick a guy that I wouldn't normally go with to see if he can backstop my squad and put me back in the money after a couple of weeks where I've been outside, AJ. I'm looking to get back in the winner's circle, pal.
Well, I mean, just a word of warning for all of our DFS players. If Paul just picked Marty Jones, maybe don't use him tonight. I think Paul just jinxed him. His four-game winning streak is probably about to come to a close here.
All right. Well, we'll have plenty to talk about next week when the trade deadline has come and gone, and we'll look forward to breaking that down, AJ. But in the meantime, we invite our listeners to thank them for listening to Puckcast with Statsman and AJ, RotoWire's signature fantasy hockey podcast with the support of our sponsor at Owner's Box. Please remember to send your comments or questions on Twitter. Follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22. You can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. As always, we invite you to listen into Puckcast to get our tips to stay out of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning and research. So long, everybody.